It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We're off and running again. Now, let's not have any clipping, Bob. Here it is, the 8th day of October 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. To those of you who mark, I won't say celebrate, that's not the right word, but to those of you who mark Rosh Hashanah, the Day of Atonement, I hope you have had a peaceful and contemplative day, and as the saying goes, that your name may be written in the book of life for another year. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and man, I think somebody must have poured a little bit of liquor into the engines when they hollered flank speed, full speed ahead toward that iceberg today. You may recall that we get our Titanic Tuesday from something our buddy Jim heard eons ago on the radio over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, when the then morning right-wing host took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who wanted to know why the rocks in West Virginia had seashells in them, because we ain't nowhere near the ocean. To which the host, who has since long gone to his long home, replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic sushi rolling mat, but, you know, there you go. So we celebrate, or at least note, examples of Titanic right-wing intellect on these Tuesdays. And today was a real head shaker. So every instance of The Horn begins with gratitude. Because, well, there's no commercials here, no ads, no exhortations for you to buy gold now or buy vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls or Bose Wave radios or steel buildings or floors made by deforesting some of the last pristine rainforests on Earth. None of that here. Only the determination of a community that wants independent, commercial-free radio to survive. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for this 8th day of the month. That would be Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you to Dwayne. Thank you to Marcia. Thank you to Tom. Thank you to Brendan. And thank you to Sue, also known to Truth Seekers as For Earth. Thank you, one and all. Of course, if you'd like to be a subscriber and join that happy few that I just mentioned on this particular day, run on over to headon.live, click on contribute, and then put in $10 and check the little box, and the next thing you know, you will be, yes, you will be sacrificing about less than half of the price of a package of chewing gum per day. That's what a $10 a month subscription works out to. As it stands, as far as fundraising is concerned, we are at $275 to finish, to get even with 8 days into October, $275. And I will note that we kind of, and I mean, this is just me, the misery that has been bedeviling us for a week now continues. And so we need to keep up with it, because at some point in time, I'm going to be, I have a feeling, talking to a bail bondsman. So there's that. And not knowing what the situation's going to be and whether I'm going to be here for every program this month, I just don't know. We also have to keep all the bills paid, but you understand. So $275 if you want to help out over at the Contribute tab at headon.live. Of course, there's always the U.S. Postal Service. That address is also at headon.live. And you could become a Patreon subscriber if you wanted to. And that would be cool, too. Whatever works best for you. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot on both decks aboard the USS Trump-tanic. Don't no rats flee this sinking ship. That iceberg's got nothing on us. Nothing. It's a perfect iceberg. It's a perfect ship. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So let's get this is kind of pop culture-y and it's a little bit shallow. But I want to... I saw this earlier today and I felt conflicted over it. I generally like Ellen DeGeneres. But this past weekend, she got caught up in an absolute shit storm. Because the camera cut away to her, or the camera cut, you know, they'll show people in the boxes and whatnot. And down there at the Jerry Jones, Jerry Mahal, Taj Mahjerry, that great big nightmare of a stadium that was built on the backs of the people of Texas and solely to enrich Jerry Jones. Well, the Packers were playing the Cowboys Sunday. And, of course, if you don't already know, I'm pleased to announce, and I'm sure our buddy John Bridivo is somewhere grieving, but, man, the Packers made the Cowboys look real bad. Not as bad as the Niners made the Browns look last night, but real bad. 34-10, the Packers won. And lo and behold, there sat Ellen DeGeneres next to Jerry Jones' daughter. But what got people in a lather was the fact that she was yucking it up and having a high old time with none other than Dim Leader, W. And I mean, the internet went all in on her. Liberal Twitter, progressive Twitter, what have you. Because, see, for those of us with long enough memory, we might tend to recall that George W. Bush rode to re-election, to the extent he was actually reelected, in 2004 on the backs of the LGBTQ community. Yeah. And Ellen is, of course, gay and married to a woman. This apparently did not enter her calculus when it came to hanging out there. And so she still does her syndicated show. And she's adorable and funny. And so she did a monologue about all the hell that she'd caught. And it boiled down to, we all have to be kind to each other, which I subscribe to in large part. I think back to the words of one of my heroes, Kurt Vonnegut, who said, God damn it, babies, you've got to be kind. And that motivates me a lot of the time. She didn't mention Kurt Vonnegut, but Ellen DeGeneres in her thing said, when I say be kind, I mean be kind to everybody. And this is where the conundrum comes in. Because, see, not only did George W. Bush shit all over the LGBTQ community while he was in office in a tawdry and cynical exercise in political expediency. Oh, he railed about the sanctity of marriage. Oh, I got the score wrong. Thank you, Flavio. Serving as the ad hoc corrections department this evening. Not those kind of corrections. I guess the ad hoc ombudsman. I said 3410. I meant 3424. I knew what the score was. I was thinking more along the lines of the beatdown that the Browns took last night. Whew! Man, all that preseason Browns going to go to the Super Bowl stuff didn't play out real well, did it? Oops. But hope springs eternal along the southern shore of Lake Erie, and good on them because it's a great old tradition. But anyway, there was a sort of explanatory tone, but there was also a little bit of shaming I got as I watched the clip from Ellen DeGeneres. That we're just mean people. And like I said, I'm conflicted on this. I want to agree with her that you got to be nice to everybody, but man, can't we put a fucking asterisk by that everybody part? And I'm not going to go to, I mean, aren't there just some people you shouldn't be nice to? Because I'm so old, I can remember opposing the misguided and bloodthirsty run-up to the unprovoked war on the innocent people of Iraq. I just remember it way too well. In fact, I remember that it was about this time in 2004, when news broke from Johns Hopkins that in the space of a little bit more than a year, the bloodthirsty slaughter of Iraq had resulted in upwards of 1 million innocent civilian deaths. That's just the deaths. And every last one of those was chargeable to the account of George W. Bush. Because the nature of the analysis that was performed back in 2004 was that had there been no Iraq war, those 1 million innocent human beings would not have died. And so Ellen DeGeneres, obviously is a lovely person with her heart entirely in the right place, got this one
badly wrong. But it was a social situation, darling, and what do? Just turn to them and say, I'm not going to speak to you, you bloodthirsty fucking killer, you mass murderer, you one-sixth of a Holocaust son of a gun, you?
Or maybe this is just the kind of unpleasant shit you find yourself having to deal with once you've become a multi-bajillionaire and you have to go hobnobbing around with the multi-bajillionaire crowd. See, I'm not one of those. Neither are y'all. So we can hang out with the people we hang out with, say howdy. I mean, look, I got a note from Kyle, who said, Kyle didn't know I was going to be talking about this, but it's surprisingly on point. Kyle said, I've been thinking about impeachment in relation to the maggots a lot lately, how many of them would react to it and such. Today something happened that was a moment of enlightenment. This guy who had more fake neo-Nazi and Confederate medals on his hat than Sheriff David Clark ever had on his shirt came through my, and that's Clarky, ever came through my, on his shirt, came through my line at the grocery store. He was a pretty respectful guy, and if he wasn't so obvious about it, you wouldn't necessarily know that he was a white supremacist neo-Nazi type. And I got to thinking, these guys got seriously turned around in life and didn't have someone to look up to as a good role model. Consequently, they view Trump as a father figure who gives them validation for their hatred that has consumed them. This is why they'll never leave Trump, no matter what. I know it's been discussed on the program before, but it was like an aha moment for me. And it also works very nicely in conjunction with this opening little, these observations. I'm sure that at any given moment when I'm wandering through the Wiggling Pig or down at the Rippy Mart or at the post office or over to the Kroger's or, God forbid, even the Wally World, I'm probably dealing at any point in time with and by a vast majority with maggots. Simply because of where I live. But we're not screaming at each other and we, you know, hey, how you doing? Hey, have a good day. Hope it's good. Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, I guess that's the last of the good weather. Yeah, but we sure do need the rain. And that, you know what? That falls under Ellen DeGeneres' broad philosophical heading of being kind. Holding doors open, that kind of thing. But there's a difference between that. I mean, I don't know. Would I, if the opportunity arose, would I let the door fly back in the face of a woman with her arms full wearing a maggot shirt? I'm really not that kind of person. But there's a big damn difference between not being shitty among... Oh, there he goes, bringing class into it again. Among your own class and the necessity of speaking truth to power. I mean, does when I say be kind, I mean be kind to everybody. Does that apply to, like, Baby Doc Duvalier? Or Colonel Pinochet? Does it apply to George W. Bush? Because, among other things, when things were looking kind of sketchy with Brett Kavanaugh, you might recall that W came out and said, I sure would like to see that Judge Kavanaugh be a Supreme Court justice. He's a fine feller. So this, I mean, I really don't have any thesis here except to say that Be Kind to Everybody probably needs an asterisk. I mean, there are the obvious historical examples that we're not going to go into because everybody's dead. Should you be kind to Dick Cheney? If only for the sake of that decent human being's heart that's beating in his chest? These are real and moral conundrums. And what some people were pointing out on social media is that if Ellen DeGeneres can be nice to George Bush while sitting in the luxury box at a Cowboys game, then it sort of prophesies that at some point in time, mercifully, after he's no longer president, if he's still around and still got a mind, that, and I think the example given was that Jimmy Kimmel will go roller skating with Bush or something, or Bush, no, with Trump. Or, I don't know, Seth Meyer will sit down to a taco bowl with him and maybe a few rails of crushed up Sudafed. And I'm not, I don't want cards in that game. Yeah, see, there's Flavio, nice to everybody. I'm kind of conflicted about being friendly with perpetrators of crimes against humanity, torturers, you know, very bad human specimens. I remember early in his presidency when Dim Leader was working the rope line over somewhere near Philadelphia and somebody was shaking his hand and said, "You're the worst president ever." And W just shot back, "Who gives a fuck what you think?" Yeah. Obviously, this is not one of the weightier matters of the day. But it was still, I mean, it's a moral, it's a philosophical question that I suppose we all have to answer for ourselves. What would you do? I mean, I assume that Ellen and Portia didn't necessarily know that they were going to be hanging out with a uncharged, unconvicted, but very definite war criminal. I mean, do you go hand holding back to the ladies' room and go, pop, 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 pop. Oh, what are we going to do? Oh, just be nice. Well, and you know what? That's entirely possible. Brother Deacon Asa says, perhaps in light of the current steaming pile of hog shit that's in the White House, W actually looks like a nice guy to Ellen. It's a sliding scale, Bob. Yeah, I get that, but if it's a sliding scale, then, well, shit. W killed a million people. By choice. Not by necessity, but by choice. And far be it from me to give any goddamn credit to Nitwit Nero at all, but he hasn't killed any million people yet. Megan says, honest question, this Ellen W. situation reminds me of the time Eminem was singing with Elton John at the MTV Music Awards. It was a controversy because his lyrics are rife with homophobic sentiments. After performing a song on stage, Elton made a point to walk over to Eminem and give him a bear hug. Honest question for the LGBTQ community, Tracy. I'm looking at you. Tracy's not the But Tracy doesn't hide her feelings under a bushel basket either. Is this a purposeful move to be the bigger person? Yeah, I think that's fairly obvious. And maybe to change hearts. Now, see, maybe and that changing hearts part of it, don't think for an instant that if you put the question to Dim Leader, if you had it all over to do over again, would you still slaughter the million innocent Iraqis, George? And those bastards are nailed down on it. They won't give an iota of ground. Yes, because he tried to kill my daddy, and he's dead now. So, there we go. Just, like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday, so we had something. I understand the sentiment. But I'm not sure that she got it right. Subject line W, Jim says, had bad dealings with him in my position in the Air National Guard Readiness Center at Andrews Air Force Base. Was he even sober, Jim? That would be back in his not sober phase. Yes, Steve distilling it nicely. W, I seem to recall, lied to take us into a war that killed a million innocent people. Perhaps I'm mistaken. No, you get an A for that, Steve. You're absolutely right. Kyle, on the other hand, who's gay. Not that, you've told us, Kyle. I mean, I'm just editorially reminding. Okay, I understand the whole be kind to one another thing, but why the fuck should I have to be kind to a guy who tried to use his power to get past a fucking constitutional amendment to keep me and members of the LGBTQ community from having the right to fucking get married to someone of the same gender and have the same rights as a heterosexual couple? I guess, yeah. Right, because... The first and easiest reach in any of these in an issue like this is to say, you know, had he lived to see the change of heart that George Wallace went through, would Dr. King have gone up and given him a big old hug? Of course, the difference between George Wallace and W being George Wallace repented. He actually repented of his behavior. On the other hand, W has never repented of, do the math. The average amount of blood in a human being, multiply that by a million. Now imagine George W. Bush standing in it. So, right. Jason with a note. Saying, shame on Michelle, Ellen, etc. No excuses. Pointing to Michelle Obama hugging on W. Clarity says Elton John lost me when he played. I guess they is right. Elton John, sorry, Clarity, that's just me having language difficulties. Elton John lost me when they played at Rush Limbaugh's wedding reception. Yeah, that was bad. Steve in New York. Ellen, W., and other members of the moneyed class, oh dear, dear Bob, those of the moneyed class don't have to apologize to each other. Money equals absolution. Sorry. No breaks for collaborator DeGeneres. For real, Bob, Jim says, W was a born-again jerk to whom no regulation applied. Hell of a thing, that privilege. Yeah, there you go. Jimmy, cowbell for Jimmy, up in the great Northwest. Me being a black man, it's like me kicking it with David Duke. It's exactly like that, Jimmy. Exactly. Thank you. Scott in San Diego, dealing with Trump, either socially or professionally, dealing with Trump is, well, let's let the late singer-songwriter Roger Miller explain it. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. It's all the smelly chunks scattered about. There's no way to successfully navigate that territory. Well said. Flavio, if anything, out of an abiding sense of self-respect, my face would remain emotionless and blank if I happened upon W. or Cheney. Still full of admiration for that guy who walked past Cheney and said, "Go fuck yourself." I think that was in Mississippi, wasn't it? Yeah, during Katrina. Oh, and we are off to a start. Thank you very kindly. Some early thank yous to send along. Thanks to Keith. Thank you, Keith. And thank you to Anatole. Thank you very kindly. That means that we've gone from 275 to, wait a minute, 230. $230 finishes fundraising for the evening. Thank you. Thank you both very kindly. Hopefully you'll have some company in short order. So that's just a starting place. Man, we got other stuff. Now, the big breaking news as of airtime was the announcement that the White House has declared that it absolutely will oppose and not in any wise cooperate with the impeachment inquiry. Surprise! Not. Because they sent a shitty letter to Nancy Pelosi saying that they wouldn't honor subpoenas. They won't. Because today, when Sondland, Ambassador Sondland, and, you know, this is one of those, I had one of those movie moments, and I thought about one of my favorite films of the last 30 years or so, L.A. Confidential. And there was a character, the plot surrounds or circles around the murder of a dirty cop. And his name was something very close to Sondland. And of course, Sondland, the ambassador, bought himself the EU ambassadorship with a million dollar plus donation to the Trump inaugural committee. Stensland was the dirty cop in L.A. Confidential. It made me think that eventually we probably will wind up with somebody in this inquiry, in this parade of sleaze and graft. We're probably going to wind up with a Heisenberg in there somewhere. Really. But no, they're not going to cooperate. And so today, the State Department forbade Ambassador Sondland from being deposed. In other words, from obeying the law. Note coming in from our buddy, Texas T. Bob, sadly, Ellen proved again to our heartbreaking reminder that money in the end will win out. Ellen has the capacity to show Bush compassion because he didn't personally fuck them over. along with the fact she can go and live and be happy anywhere in the world she may desire, does make a difference. A bigger difference than probably most of us would care to admit. So that, but no, back to the big breaking story that they're not going to cooperate. Anybody surprised by that is going to have a real hard time coming to grips with a certain fact about a certain jolly red fellow who comes around about Christmas time every year. There was a hint of where they were headed earlier. It was today, earlier today, in a hearing in which the, Chief United States District Judge Beryl Howell was holding a hearing on the issue of the Congress seeking documents from the executive branch. Sitting in the courtroom was a reporter for Politico by the name of Darren Samuelson. And what Judge Beryl Howell wanted to know was whether an attorney, a DOJ attorney by the name of Elizabeth Shapiro, whether she was of the opinion that Congress had no rights to demand grand jury information from the Mueller investigation. Because I know that happened a million, trillion, billion years ago now, but it's still wending its way through the courts, and the Congress still wants to see what the grand jury saw. And based upon precedent, as previously established, has a right to upon a proper showing. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in it. Among other things, Democrats now believe, and I may have mentioned this last week, Democrats now believe that the Nitwit Nero regime will show that Trump actually and actively lied. I know, another big surprise, but this is kind of a big deal. They think that one of the redactions in the Mueller report has to do with Trump lying about contacts between his campaign and WikiLeaks. In a previous Politico story, they wrote, lawyers for the House of Representatives revealed on Monday, and that would be last, that they have reason to believe that the grand jury redactions in Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report show that President Donald Trump lied about his knowledge of his campaign's contact with WikiLeaks. The attorneys made the stunning suggestion in a court filing as part of the House Judiciary Committee's bid for Mueller's grand jury materials, which have remained secret by law. Beryl Howell, previously mentioned, is hearing that lawsuit. Okay? And so, Judge Howell inquired of lawyer Shapiro as to whether she thought that it would be wrong for the courts to compel the DOJ to release not this grand jury information. He was asking her to cast her mind backwards into history and asked her, in fact, was the court wrong when it ordered the release of the grand jury materials from Watergate to Congress back when the House was engaged in an impeachment inquiry over Richard Pinhead Nixon? At first, Elizabeth Shapiro tried to do a little buck and wing, scattered a little sawdust on the floor, did a little bit of a shuffle, and then tap danced a little bit, and finally said, "Well, it's impossible to say. If the same Watergate roadmap case came today, there'd be a different result, because the law's changed since 1974, and yet you wouldn't be able to do the same thing absent changes to the grand jury rules and statutes." That's a DOJ lawyer telling an Article III judge what he can't do. Beryl? I don't know. She? Not sure. Haven't looked it up. What they can't do. To which Beryl Howell replied, "Wow." And you know, when you get a wow out of a federal judge, you've really gone somewhere. It's sort of like that moment when Homer Simpson was trying to buy an RV, and they ran his credit, and the siren went off. And Homer asked the car salesman, "Is that a good siren?" No. And the salesman responded to him, "Homer, did you ever hear a good siren?" There aren't just a shit ton of good wows that emerge from the mouths of Article III serving for life federal judges. And so Judge Beryl Howell replied, "Oh, wow, okay. As I said, the department is taking an extraordinary position." And because Elizabeth Shapiro really doesn't know anything about the first law of holes, namely when you're in one, quit digging, she actually decided to respond to that wow. If wows are rare, the idea of pushing back against one, well, that should... hen's teeth is what that should be, rare as. Elizabeth Shapiro, after Beryl Howell said, "As I said, the department is taking an extraordinary position," she said, "Well, I don't think it's that extraordinary, Your Honor." Liz, at that point in time, what you do is sit down. Because you just got a wow out of a federal judge. I mean, the next thing after wow is for the judge to jump up and put hands in air and thunder, "Great jumping Jehoshaphat!" Wow. And that happened much earlier in the day, but when I saw that, I got a pretty good idea of what was coming. The Great Wall of Maggot is going up, just not down at the southern border. Yeah, Steve in New York says, "I'm not surprised, but it is definitive that he won't leave if defeated." No, I don't think it's so definitive. That's a further conversation. Because if he's defeated on January 20th, 2021, he stops being president. And he can sit there and rail all he wants to, but at that point in time, he's going to have to go to Avignon or somewhere because he can't live in the White House no more. He's going to get kicked out of public housing. But then again, he's referred to the White House as a dump. So I suspect it won't be that great a loss to him. He'll get to go back to that tacky pile of bricks and corruption and glass and steel in Midtown Manhattan. Well, there's a fun little idea, courtesy of Flavio. Wisconsin Democrat Representative Mark Pocan has suggested that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, you know, he graduated first in his class from West Point. he's suggesting that Pompeo's salary be withheld until Gordon Sondland testifies before Congress. And it's not like he just went on the TV and said it. He wrote a letter. He wrote a letter to Pompeo and said, a provision of federal law allows Congress to withhold any federal official's compensation if they prevent another government employee from communicating with lawmakers or committees. Sure hope Mike's got a little nest egg there. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Pootie will write him a check. Mm-hmm. Kyle said, you mean to tell me he's not real? Stop ruining childhoods, Bob. Damn. Sorry. Yeah, Steve says, I want to agree with you, but he has the guns. Well, on January 20th, 2021, he will not have the military any longer. That's fact. Hey, thank you very kindly to Samson. We just took the fundraising goal down substantially. It just went down to $165. Thank you, Samson. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. It is indeed a big deal. But that sense that this is all getting it's all beginning to move at a dizzying pace. And understand, there's no legal land, there's no legal leg for the Trump regime to stand on. They're just stonewalling. And it eventually will not, it won't end well unless the fix is in at the Supreme Court. At which point, though, the Supreme Court is essentially dead for all intents and purposes as to even nominally being a neutral arbiter of the law. And old Balls and Strikes John Roberts has to take that into account. Now, there were hearings LGBTQ rights in the workplace today before those nine wise souls. Among other things, the guy who holds the seat that was stolen from Merrick Garland opened his gob today. He actually gave people a little bit of hope, saying that or suggesting that discrimination based on whether one is LGBTQ is sex discrimination within the meaning of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. And then that all sort of fell apart. For instance, old Balls and Strikes Roberts asked the litigants whether, quote, whether the court should be in the business of updating old statutes, and said the word sex was understood at the time to mean men and women. No, not really. Brett Kavanaugh, who likes beer, had enough sense to keep his mouth shut in this one. Then there was Ann's boy, Neil. He said, let's do truth serum, okay? Wouldn't the employer maybe say it's because the person was a man who liked other men? And isn't that first part sex? But then he said, to ban discrimination against people, get the hockey puck, I think. To ban discrimination against people for being LGBTQ would, in his words, create massive social upheaval that might be caused by extending the law to LGBTQ workers. This is not surprising if you take into account the fact that Gorsuch wanted to adhere so strictly to the law that he told an African-American truck driver that he should have frozen to death in a truck instead of going for help, and that justified him being fired. Now, when he was sitting on the bench out in Colorado, that was fine because there were more intelligent people who could overrule his white wing ass. That ain't the case anymore. Fortunately, the ACLU lawyer responding to Gorsuch's remark took it apart like a Zen master taking apart a spider web. David Cole responded, "So, first of all, federal courts of appeals have been recognizing that discrimination against transgender people is sex discrimination for 20 years. There's been no upheaval. As I was saying, there are transgender male lawyers in this courtroom following the male dress code and going to the men's room, and the court's dress code and sex-segregated restrooms have not fallen. So the notion that somehow this is going to be a huge upheaval, we haven't seen that upheaval for 20 years. There's no reason you would see that upheaval. Transgender people follow the rule that's associated with their gender identity. It's not disruptive. As to whether this is a question of interpretation, it is absolutely a question of interpretation. How in the world can the court interpret Title VII to say that Ann Hopkins can't be fired for being insufficiently feminine, but my client can be fired for being insufficiently masculine?" Shit, I think if I was old Neil Gorsuch, I'd adopt the Slappy Thomas standard and not say so much from the bench anymore. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me, my dear old fraternity brother, Neil Gorsuch. I mean, we weren't in the same chapter, we just come from the same fraternity. But that's a pretty stern, that's pretty stern rat slapping.
And he also took apart the whole silly business of old Balls and Strikes Roberts saying that we're updating old statutes. Well, another word for that is interpreting, which is what the Supreme Court is in the business of doing, going back to, Marbury versus Madison in 1803 or 4 or something. Lawyer Cole said, interpreting a statute is not depriving the democratic process. Because, see, these no-good Republicans are, we want to send it back to Congress, knowing full well that Congress is absolutely incapable of getting anything done because of, among other things, people like Moscow Mitch McConnell. Interpreting a statute is not depriving the democratic process. It is doing what the court is supposed to do within the democratic process. So there's no deprivation of the democratic process here. Secondly, the purpose of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, as this court defined it, was to make sex irrelevant to people's inability or to people's ability to succeed at work, to make sex irrelevant to people's ability to succeed at work. When Harris Holmes fired Amy Stevens because it learned about her sex assigned at birth being different from her gender identity, it did not make sex irrelevant to her ability to succeed at work. It made it determinative. Think about it this way. If Harris Holmes fired a man because he was a man, that would be sex discrimination. If it fired an employee because he was insufficiently masculine, that would be clearly sex discrimination. Bingo. This court 30 years ago said in Pricewaterhouse, we are beyond the day when an employer could evaluate employees by insisting that they match the stereotypes associated with their group. We are certainly beyond that day today as well, and what Harris Holmes did was to insist that she match the stereotypes associated with her group. That's impermissible under this court's precedents, and that's impermissible under the literal terms of the statute, and this court should rule for Amy Stevens. Thank you. It was powerful stuff. But let's not kid ourselves. Slappy Thomas will vote against Amy Stevens. Alito will vote against Amy Stevens. If she was young and black, he'd vote in favor of shooting her in the back of the head at 30 feet away, because that's what Alito does. Or if she was 9 years old, he'd have her strip searched, because he did that too. Brett Kavanaugh will secretly acknowledge that Amy Stevens is a woman, and once he's acknowledged that she's a woman, he'll wonder what it would be like to grope her while having had too much beer, and then he'll vote against her. That leaves old Balls and Strikes Roberts and textualist Ann's boy Neil. That's the sad thing. This is a slam dunk. This is a no-brainer, and God knows there are five no-brains sitting on that court whose names I've just mentioned. But it's probably not going to be sufficient. If one of them would break, it would be great, because it would be a glorious day for the advancement of freedom under the Constitution of the United States. And every time freedoms expand in this country, we are a better country. When freedoms contract in this country, those are the times that we talk about the nightmare eras of our existence. 1787 to 1865, for instance. Jim Crow, for instance. The denial of
women's suffrage, for instance. And in each case, there was a Supreme Court decision or host of decisions that backed up the nightmare. Brother Deacon Asa, LGBTQ rights. Bob, you live in a country that still allows the gay panic defense as an argument for ending the universe for gay folks. Aren't we getting a little ahead of ourselves? In 2018, Senator Edward Markey and Representative Joseph Kennedy III introduced Bill and Bill, respectively, which would ban the gay and trans panic defense at the national level. Both bills died in committee. In June 2019, the bill was reintroduced in Congress to amend Title 18 of the United States Code in order to ban the use of the gay panic and trans panic defense in cases of murder, assault, and other violent crimes. I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves or not, Brother Deacon Asa. It seems to me that answering this question in the affirmative, that discrimination to the effect that discrimination against the LGBTQ community is violative of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, might make it a little easier to take that next step and eliminate the gay panic and trans panic defenses. Jimmy says, sex discrimination, when you tell the boss no. Steve in New York, extending the law to LGBTQ workers. I probably seem the weirdo here, but that's not what would happen if the court essentially said sex discrimination applied to sexual orientation and even sexual identity. What we need to understand is that such a holding would apply to everyone, including straight people. When we incorrectly characterize this as applying only to LGBTQ people, we play right into right-wing special rights meme. Sex discrimination applies to people who fall inside or outside the mainstream idea of what proper sexual stereotypes are. The bottom line is, taking an adverse employment action against anyone on that basis is illegal, what sexual orientation or identity that person has. Please, please, please characterize it properly. Point taken, Steve. Because that what that means, what a win today would mean, would be that, oh, I don't know, a gay-run business couldn't fire someone for being straight either. That's a good way of looking at it. And thank you, Steve, by the way, for making a challenge. Steve just put a $10 challenge on the table. He'll match the next 10 that come in. And that would take us down to 145 to go. Thank you. Actually, we just got to 145. It would take us to 125. Thank you to our buddy Texas T. So we're at 145. No. Sorry, I got to do all the math all over again. It gets so confusing. If I was really good at this, I'd be writing this stuff down as we went. But no. 30. Mm-hmm. 60, 155, 135. Yeah, we're at 135. Thanks to Texas T. And if Steve's challenge is met, that'll take us down to 115. That's tremendous. Thank you. Fairly esoteric range of topics for the first hour, don't you think? And it gets even better. Because there's oh so much more. I mentioned the courtroom experience of Elizabeth Shapiro earlier. The U.S. Department of Education got hailed into court, too, recently. And not in a good way. It was a federal magistrate judge who is lower than a federal district judge. This is just a magistrate. But still cloaked with the awesome power of the federal government. Federal magistrate Sally Kim tied into lawyers for the education department at a hearing in San Francisco. Because it turns out that even though the debt of former Corinthian College students, and remember, Corinthian College was one of those scammy online schools that was run, you know, by a religious outfit. I mean, Corinthian. I mean, they're not talking about leather. And lo and behold, Betsy DeVos, who didn't even go to college and doesn't give a fuck about education except for the fact that she'd like to destroy the education, the public educational system of the United States, Betsy DeVos's education department is continuing to torment Corinthian College students who have loans, even though those loans have been forgiven. According to the Washington Post, as of this Friday past, a court order barring the education department from collecting on the federal student loans of former Corinthian College students. Well, despite that, the agency kept on pursuing the debts. Some former students of the defunct for-profit college had their paychecks garnished. Others had their tax refunds seized by the federal government. But, you know, judges, we don't need no stinking judges. So the lawyers got hauled in front of Magistrate Sally Kim, who cast her baleful gaze upon the lawyers and said, "I'm not sending anyone to jail yet, but it's good to know I have that ability." Now, I'm not sure if this is contempt or sanctions. Oh, be contempt. Be contempt. Every now and then I allow myself to engage in a little bit of fantasy. No, not like that. No, I was just thinking of hailing Betsy DeVos into the courtroom and hearing the magistrate say, "Bailiffs, close the doors and make sure Secretary DeVos doesn't leave, because we're going to have a little chat." And Betsy, who has spent her entire life clothed in the privilege of her family's vast wealth, well, Betsy's gonna see how the other half lives. And then find her in contempt and stuff her ass in jail for a while. You know, like the federal court did with Sister Clark Kim Davis. I mean, good, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian that Betsy DeVos is, I'm sure she could pogo stick right up onto the cross and talk about how she was being persecuted for her deep and abiding faith in Jeebus. Wouldn't that be delightful? Wouldn't it be magic? Something like that. Oh, and it's, God damn it. It's Medal of Freedom time at the White House again. If you're wearing the Presidential Medal of Freedom and you've gotten it since, January 20th, 2017, what it means is that you are a maggot lickspittle and that you're wearing a bribe around your neck. You might recall that one recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom is the wife of Sheldon Adelson, who has never contributed a goddamn thing to the well-being of this nation. Not one. Ever. At all. Or a boyhood hero of mine, Jerry West, who now has the Presidential Medal of Freedom because he's from West Virginia and it would look good to the maggots for him to have them. And that's not me. That's what Nitwit Nero said when he was giving it to him.
Well, if you weren't from West Virginia, you probably wouldn't be getting this.
Now, here comes, I kid you not, here comes Ed Meese. God almighty, I bet you thought you'd never hear that nasty name again for, no. Hell, I didn't even know old Ed was still among the quick. But he is. Yep, the man who tried to wage a single-handed war on boobies. As old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan's attorney general. Yeah. Now, the Medal of Freedom citation for Ed reads as follows.
Edwin Meese III has long been a thought leader and strong conservative voice on matters of law and policy. As counselor to President Ronald Reagan, Mr. Meese helped craft foreign policy strong enough to end the Cold War and played a pivotal role in securing historic tax cuts.
Both of which are just a gigantic pile of verbal feces.
As Attorney General, he promoted federalism and the original public understanding of our Constitution and worried a lot about naked women.
No, that's not in there.
Since leaving public service, Edwin Meese has continued to champion our nation's founding principles through his extensive work at the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah. The man is so fucking crooked, though, that they'll have to screw him into the dirt when he does die. Funny how the citation makes no mention of, ooh, the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, Meese argued that if the president called it national security, they could blow right past anything that, any law that Congress passed. It's almost like, Bill Barr is his little bastard child. That's right, Arnold. That's right. Perfect. Ed Meese, so crooked he could hide behind a corkscrew. There we go. Precisely. And just it ripped from the pages of the headline and all of that. From the Jerusalem Post this morning. Syrian sources claim Turkey attacked in Iraq, not Syria. The attacks come after the U.S. announced that it would withdraw from Syria as Turkey prepares for a military operation to create a safe zone in northern Syria. That would be a Kurd-free zone. A Kurdish genocide zone. Just in case anybody's confused. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights denied a report by Syrian state news agency Sana Monday evening, claiming that Turkey had conducted airstrikes in Syria against the Syrian Democratic Forces. On the other hand, however, news I saw as I was preparing for this evening's program indicated that, yes, Turkish troops are massing on the border and getting ready to get their slaughter on. This will not be pretty. Up in the great Northwest, thank you to our dear friend and sister Jude, who responded to responded to Steve's challenge. Steve, your challenge has been met. Thank you, Jude. And so that takes us down to 115, I think. Yeah, $115 for the evening. Stephen Vermont, Ed Meese. Is that the same Ed Meese who declared war on drugs and a war on porn? By the way, who won those? That would be the drugs and the porn. Ed. Ed so cool he spells it with a hyphen. Back to the Supreme Court. Megan says, I'm holding my breath with what this SCOTUS will decide. As Tom Hartman pointed out earlier today, this will affect everyone. What if a boss decides a woman isn't feminine enough? My own mother said this happened to her at work this year. Talk about arbitrary and capricious. What constitutes feminine? Well, I see you're wearing pants today. And it's not far from there to, why aren't you wearing a beekeeper suit? Yeah, there's another good meme reference, courtesy of Jim. So crooked he uses a corkscrew for a ruler. Kind of hard to avoid the corkscrew references, isn't it? Steve asking in New York, at what point does he award Nixon or Cheney or himself the Medal of Freedom? Well, that will be one of those seminal moments when he gives himself the Medal of Freedom. And I don't know, will he have melanoma put it on him, or will he get all Napoleon and pin it around his own neck? Well, Nixon's dead, so he can't get it. I don't think it. Can you award the Medal of Freedom posthumously? Has that been done? Cheney, though? Oh, that wouldn't surprise me. But it's when he gives it to himself. Then you know, we'll be somewhere. Oh, yeah, thanks for the reminder, Scott, in San Diego. It's time for some sound. Absolutely. No, it's hockey puck time, by the way. You won't be all right. Well, you know what? Some people if you're of a certain age, you may not know this. This is something I grew up with. Oh, and there's another reminder. Thank you, Jude. The Meese Commission. It had good old Dominionist James Dobson on the commission. Meese had him join up as they visited porno stores in the D.C. area together, all in the name of our nation needing to be morally correct. By the way, Bob, Jude adds, James Dobson was spiritual advisor to Ted Bundy, which allowed Bundy to relive his reign of terror. Oh, help us, says Jude. Yeah, that's James Dobson who said you have to beat children until they cry real tears. The same James Dobson who, just remind you, because we haven't had a clip from him in a while, the same James Dobson out there in Colorado Springs at Focus on the Family. The same James Dobson who said that if a man wants to make sure his son will never get the gay, what he needs to do is get in the shower with him naked. You know, when the little guy's about knee-high to a penis. And he needs to show him his penis. Daddy's supposed to shake his dick in his face. Son, this is a penis. Don't ever put one of these in your mouth, son, because that'll make God not like you anymore. Now, get out of the shower. I'm going to beat you till you cry real tears. Yeah, Christianity on display, on parade. Oh, I can't even handle that. Kyle says, wait till Trump gives medals of freedom to Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton for avoiding being found guilty and removed from office during their respective impeachment trials.
You know, people are finding out more and more about Andrew Johnson.
Oh, but don't think for a minute that you're gonna distract me from the crazy. Because you're not. Nope. Let's check in with repeat DUI offender Matt Goetz of Florida. Matt Goetz is outraged, I tell you, at the behavior of the Democrats in trying to honor their oaths to the Constitution of the United States. And they were casting about, and Goetz is standing right next to Jim Shorts Jordan, who still can't find his jacket because the heathen women folk are allowed to go around wearing pants. I guess he finds that insufficiently feminine. God knows he'd fire Nancy Pelosi if he could, no matter what the hell she was wearing. But they're really mad at Adam Schiff and Matt Goetz in particular. Well, he's right worked up.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo.
And by the way, it's Schiff, not shift. He's trying to elide Schiff and shit and get that started over in the wing nutosphere. Yes, a malicious Captain Kangaroo. Just in case you thought you misheard that.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo. He lied about...
Yep, malicious Captain Kangaroo. Bob Keeshan. I'm just old enough that by the time I was starting school, Sesame Street was just getting going. So I spent my childhood watching Captain Kangaroo on CBS every morning. Bunny Rabbit, Mr. Moose, Mr. Green Jeans, Grandfather Clock, Ping Pong Balls. It was good, and it had some of the same characteristics of Mr. Rogers. Be nice to each other. Don't be mean to each other. You know, even the ping pong balls that Bunny Rabbit dropped on him. Or was it Mr. Moose? Bunny Rabbit was a real mess with his carrot tops. But even the ping pong balls were in good fun. I saw that a good friend of mine who was up in Pittsburgh this past weekend, I guess, went to the Mr. Rogers Museum or whatever, and they've got King Friday there, and what was it, Thomas the Tiger?
I forget. But the whole neighborhood and the kingdom of make-believe was there. Sweet. But apparently, in the twisted and alcohol-sodden mind of Matt Gaetz, Captain Kangaroo is to be found somewhere between Captain Bly and Captain Queeg. I guess Captain Kangaroo sits around, it must be some big-ass hands, but he sits around turning ping-pong balls over and over in his hands. Oh, they fooled me with the carrots. A malicious Captain Kangaroo. So, I guess Matt Gaetz was maybe about two, if he was even born, when Captain Kangaroo went off the air in 1984. Yeah, what's that, Jim? Jim says, tallywhacker, Bob, please. No, thank you. Steve in New York says, James Dobson, please don't tell the shower story. Too late. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Steve in New York says, ping pong balls, Mr. Moose. Wasn't there something called picture pages on there? Or no, picture, wasn't it? That would draw stuff, basically. Yeah. But out of that, this idiot, and this is one of the staunchest defenders of Donald Trump. Hell, I'll bet even Donald Trump. No. One of the staunchest defenders of Donald Trump thinks that Captain Kangaroo was a malicious dispenser of rough liberal justice. Ouch. And by the way, Trey Gowdy, because what would this be without eventually having some Trey Gowdy in it? Trey Gowdy, who a man who looks like he's made entirely of wax and can't exist in a room warmer than 61 degrees. He's been signed on. He's been brought on board as a member of Donald Trump's legal team opposing the impeachment. Oh, goody, this should work out well. Last I checked, I seem to recall that Madam Secretary Dr. Hillary Clinton, she handed him his ass. And at one point in time when they asked him to join the impeachment team, it was reported he said, No, I've got to rewax my hair. But now, no, he's going to be a good little maggot. So I presume that his expertise will be to scream Benghazi every time somebody brings up Ukraine. Benghazi. Yeah, okay, Ron Raleigh says, hey, better not malign Bunny Rabbit. P.S., I don't know about Clarabelle. I don't trust clowns, because before he was Captain Kangaroo, Bob Keeshan was Clarabelle the Clown on Howdy Doody. Captain, they put things in our ears. Yeah. Jesus, they're stupid. Who? Honest to Pete. It just goes on and on and on. Pulled from the pages of ripped from the pages of the headlines. Dum dum. Let's go to Moorhead. Yes, it's not just for Kentucky anymore. Let's go to Moorhead, Minnesota, where an 18-year-old woman in Moorhead was minding her own business, driving along the streets, the mean streets of Moorhead. And it just so happened that she had an Elizabeth Warren sticker
on her car. Because you can do that in America. Well, out of nowhere, a dude, pulls up alongside her car and starts screaming about how much he hates her Elizabeth Warren sticker. You can probably imagine the language that was involved. Well, she kept on driving, ignored him. I mean, it's like something out of the Bible, the maggots you have always with you. But dude kept following her, also known as stalking. And eventually, he gets out of his car, walks in front of her, and draws a gun on her. No kidding. Over a bumper sticker. An Elizabeth Warren bumper sticker. Well, luckily, we all carry telephones in our cars with us. We've got little computers in our pockets. So she reached for hers and dialed and punched in 911. And reported that she had been threatened for having an Elizabeth threatened with a firearm for having an Elizabeth Warren sticker on her car. And lo and behold, when the police investigated, they found 27-year-old Joseph Schumacher not far away at a nearby shopping center in Moorhead, Minnesota. And upon inquiry, discovered that, yep, he had a loaded handgun in his vehicle. There were a couple of people riding along with Joseph Schumacher, and one of them snitched and confirmed that, in fact, he had screamed at the woman and then pointed a gun at her. He was booked on suspicion of felony terroristic threats, being a felon in possession of a gun, and carrying a weapon without a permit. Time out. Before they breathe a great big humongous sigh of relief over there at the headquarters of the National Ruble Association in Fairfax, Virginia. Well, obviously, he wasn't a lawful gun owner. He was a felon, and we don't want felons in possession of a gun, at least until we can get a law passed saying nothing happened. But if you go past that, even so much as a centimeter, you can't help asking yourself the question, wait a minute, if he's a felon, how'd he get a gun? And the answer is easy. The ease with which a lawful gun owner can get a gun in this country is the ease with which an unlawful gun owner can get a gun in this country. All you got to do is go to a gun sale or a swap meet or just check the pages of your local weekly horse trader that's available there on the counter at the Rippy Mart. And Zowie, you've got a gun because of our ridiculously lax firearms laws. What's that, Mighty Mouse? A Mr. Green Jeans link. Thank you. Thank you. And what did I say? We were at 115? All right. I'm officially a little confused. Let me check something here. Okay, that just the notification came in weird. We're still at 115 to go on fundraising for the evening. Steve noting, and his bail was set at $50. I don't know. Trump's contempt for Muslims. Jude says, read in the Wall Street Journal, October 8th, front page headline, U.S. blacklists Chinese firms citing repression of Muslims. Yes, I'm a state. What the? They did it. The State Department actually banned visas and travel to the United States on the part of Chinese, apparatchiks and business people and government officials associated with the torment of the Kazakhs and the Uyghurs. I mentioned that last. I mentioned that ongoing misery last night. China's got problems. Among other things, one Kazakh woman was forced to memorize. Oh Jesus! She was charged with using superstition to subvert the rule of law. That's a hell of a charge. And made to memorize crap and made to work without pay. We tend to forget because I guess we are so dependent on all the crap that they make. How awful it is over there. I mean, if you go to Beijing and you can breathe, it's possible, you'll see this much-discussed burgeoning Chinese middle class. But it doesn't take long to find out that it is still an authoritarian dictatorial state. Back to Moorhead, Minnesota. It's across the river from Fargo, North Dakota, according to Irwin, who, by the way, makes some awesome choke cherry syrup. I'd never had choke cherries before. It's yummy. Fargo is Trump country, Irwin says, as North Dakota is. Republicans everywhere. Moorhead is probably Trumpistan as well. Well, that's the thing. I took one look at the story and said, oh, I know how that guy voted. Except he's a felon, so maybe he doesn't vote. But then it's Minnesota, so maybe they're enlightened about that. But I'm pretty sure he was not a Bernie bro who was upset about Elizabeth Warren, although... all right, we'll come back to China. We will. But there's a new slur out being deployed against Elizabeth Warren. And well, let me put this in context this way. Once upon a time, there was a presidential candidate named Michael Dukakis. And when he became the Democratic nominee for president, an evil, evil man named Lee Atwater was the Republican hitman and kneecapper for George H.W. Bush. And he brought us an ad, a filthy ad, a sleazy ad, a racist ad. About a horrible human being named Willie Horton, who had been furloughed in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts only to go out and reoffend. Eventually, Bernie Shaw, moderating a debate, the presidential debate, with George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis, engaged in one of the sleaziest moments in American political television history when he challenged Michael Dukakis and his opposition to the death penalty by asking Michael Dukakis if someone raped Michael Dukakis' wife, or murdered Michael Dukakis' wife, wouldn't he want the death penalty? That's kind of a when did you stop having sex with farm animals kind of question. If you say, I didn't, that means you're having sex with farm animals. And if you say, you get the point. It's unanswerable. It goes back to the old apocryphal story about LBJ wanting his opponent to be asked exactly that question. And when his campaign manager or whatever said, LBJ, we can't do that. We don't know he's done that. Literally having sex with farm animals. LBJ said, I know that. I don't care. I just want to hear him deny it. Well, Michael Dukakis was slimed with the Willie Horton ad in which Lee Atwater expertly tapped into the always simmering fears of about to shit their pants white conservative America, that if Michael Dukakis became president, whole legions of murdering, raping black men was going to be let out of prison and asking anyone they could find.
Hey, where are the white women at?
Right? It was so nasty that Lee Atwater, when his brain was finally being eaten alive by cancer, when he realized it, and he felt the, because I guess he believed in hell or something, but he felt the flames of perdition beginning to lick at the soles of his feet, he begged forgiveness for the vile, hateful filth he had used his life to disseminate. Now, here's the thing about Willie Horton, because you have to be honest about this stuff. The Willie Horton story was not first put into the political consciousness by George H.W. Bush or his campaign. The Willie Horton story was first put into the political consciousness by one of Michael Dukakis' Democratic opponents, if I am not mistaken, Al Gore. Check me on that. Well, it's a long time from 1988 to 2019. 30 years, as a matter of fact. 31 years. Jim letting us know that he worked for the Dukakis campaign in 1988. I was at the Democratic National Convention covering it with CNN in 1988. But anyway, let's run 31 years into the future. Here we are in the present. And a smear is making the rounds with regard to Elizabeth Warren. At least on the Democratic side, they seem to have steered away from the Pocahontas bullshit, because you know what? It is possible, and she proved it was real, to have indigenous genetics and still not be an enrolled member of a tribe. To enroll in a tribe requires a certain percentage of indigenous genetics in one's heritage. Now, nitwit Nero will continue to yell Pocahontas, and Hopefully at some point, maybe she'll get a chance to defend herself against him personally. No, what they're working now, the right wing is, and particularly the Washington Free Beacon, they're taking issue with her story that she taught school for 1 year and then was forced out of her teaching career because she became pregnant. Writing at the Washington Free Beacon, Colin Anderson said, the Riverdale Board of Education, yes, really, Riverdale. She had students like Archie and Jughead and Betty and Veronica. The Riverdale Board of Education approved a second-year teaching contract for a young Elizabeth Warren, documents show, contradicting the Democratic presidential candidate's repeated claims that she was asked not to return to teaching after a single year because she was visibly pregnant. No, it doesn't contradict it. Because the contract was re-extended in the spring, namely April 21st of 1971. She was pregnant. She was visibly pregnant by June the 16th, at which point the school board accepted her resignation with regret. Because in 1971, a young woman who had become a teacher would be run out of her job for daring to be pregnant in the classroom because, horror of horrors, her young charges might begin to wonder why she was getting so big. And then, next thing you know, they're figuring out where the babies be coming from instead of from under the cabbage patch or dropped by the stork. Oh, everybody loves the stork. Here, have some champagne. People have leapt to her defense. Women pointing out that, in fact, yes, they didn't say you're fired. They didn't say you have to quit. They would just insinuate it, and that it was an understood, unwritten rule. So that's swirling around in the cesspit that is Republican smear politics, primarily because Elizabeth Warren has risen to the top, the upper echelons at the very least, of the Democrats running for president. Generally speaking, it goes Biden, her, Bernie, or her, Biden, Bernie. But there's a reason I brought up the Dukakis story relative to Willie Horton. And that's because just as the Bush campaign was not the first one to bring up Willie Horton, but instead it was a Democratic opponent, the same appears to be true of this slur. Let's check in with Megan Day. Megan Day holds herself out as being a journalist. And she writes at Jacobin magazine. She dug up a 2007 interview with Elizabeth Warren in which she said, I was married at 19 and graduated from college after I'd married. And my first year post-graduation, I worked in a public school system with children with disabilities. I did that for a year. And then that summer, I didn't have the education courses, so I was on an emergency certificate, it was called. I went back to graduate school, took a couple of courses in education, and said, I don't think this is going to work out for me. I was pregnant with my first baby, so I had a baby and stayed home for a couple of years, and I was really casting about thinking, what am I going to do? My husband's view of it was stay home. We have children. We'll have more children, and you'll love this. And I was very restless about it. So somehow, in the fevered imaginings of Megan Day at Jacobin Magazine, and Jacobin Magazine exists largely to support another candidate, Megan Day declared that this means that Elizabeth Warren lied about her teaching history. But it doesn't do what Megan Day claimed it did. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. She just happened not to tell that part of the story in 2007, but not to Megan Day of Jacobin Magazine. Oh, there you are, Will Rogers, ghost of Will Rogers. What's that, sir? You say you're not a member of an organized political party, that you're a Democrat? That you were saying that in the 1920s when the Democrats were in the wilderness and into the 1930s before you died in that plane crash? Is that what you're saying, ghost of Will Rogers? And you're saying that it still applies to this very day, apparently, and that you find that deeply depressing because we still haven't fucking learned? Oh, you just heard the, Willie Horton history, didn't you? Oh, sorry, Will. And now, of course, Kellyanne Conway is sleazing merrily along.
Another Elizabeth Warren lie about Elizabeth Warren? Warren's claim she was dismissed after her first year of teaching because she was pregnant has become a cornerstone of her stump speeches. County records contradict Warren's claim she was fired over pregnancy.
Citing to the Free Beacon story, which only gets legs because of the Jacobin story. Will we ever figure it out? Yeah, sure. That Massachusetts politician famously said, politics ain't beanbag. I get that. What I don't get is what beanbag is. I've never played beanbag. Maybe it's a Massachusetts thing. Down here, we use our beanbags to play cornhole, which is kind of like horseshoes, only with a slanted board with a hole in it, and beer drinking drunk people tossing the beanbags. Quite often in these parts, the targets, the goals, will be painted in Mountaineer colors. Although I have seen them done in Marshall colors as well. Hey, thank you, Michael. We have we've broken it down to $100 to go. Thank you very kindly indeed. So in the next hour or so, maybe we can round up $100, and then we'll be even going into prayer meeting Wednesday, and the deacons won't have quite so much to sweat. Thank you, Steve. Steve in New York says, yes, it was Al Gore. I thought so. Ron in Raleigh says, Lee Atwater. I don't think Lee would have called Willie a black man. Don't forget, Lee was also responsible for the rat-fucking of Gary Hart. That's so true. Ron observes, Republicans are barely human. Bill in Allentown, Captain Kangaroo. Sometime in the 80s, Lee Marvin was telling Carson who is... No, not going there. The Lee Marvin, Bob Keeshan story has been utterly debunked. Lee Marvin was shot all to pieces. Bob Keeshan was a Marine, but he never saw action. Especially not at Iwo Jima. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? By the way, in case anyone's curious, the correct answer to when did you stop having sex with farm animals is immediately after I last mounted your mama. And that's true, really. Anybody ever tries that, the answer is
your mother swore she'd never tell. You got to fight fire with fire. So when you just to you know, stop telling us how to respond to the If you see the Elizabeth Warren slur going around, know where it started and know it for what it is. A reminder, I would say the same thing if another candidate had started something like that about a different candidate who has a really, really vociferous fan base. I have endorsed no candidate in this Democratic primary season. The only candidate I am endorsing is whomever it is that happens to get the nomination. And I will eagerly vote for that person against Donald goddamn Trump. Lee Atwater and that word. Scott in San Diego says correct. He was definitely not unfamiliar with it. Liz Warren's job firing. Megan says, this is what irritates me about the present day. For some reason, there seems to be some sort of belief that if you don't lay all your cards the first time, you're being dishonest. Liz Warren probably didn't want to broadcast the fact that she was forced to resign over being pregnant, because when you do that while being female, that's capital B, capital F, you're deemed hysterical and paranoid, and then you spend the better part of your time, well, maybe it really was this, as if what happened to you in your own life didn't actually happen. Entirely true. Thank you, Megan. That, my friends, is a two-hour filibobster with more stuff yet to be gotten at, but I am not going to keep Todd just hanging on hold. Hey, Todd.
I don't know about all that.
You don't know?
Well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just a leftist Dominican French person looking for white women.
I understand.
You didn't get that joke, did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay, fine.
It should be that way.
Look. Yo, you know what? At the pace we're going, I think Lou Dobbs could be the next secretary of, you know.
That would be Lou Dobbs, secretary of DERP.
I mean, why not? I mean, that's what he likes is the Fox News people. But I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up. This is not Wednesday, but I don't know if you're going to talk about this story I mentioned. I'll be quiet. I won't even talk about it. But did you happen to see a car story in South Carolina that had to do with weapons like guns?
No.
In the religion? Oh my God!
No, bring it.
Like some, okay, this is some onion shit. All right. And there's a place near Greenville, right?
Okay, let's be clear. Onion shit in, like, as in, I'm surprised. I thought it was from the onion, or this onion shit as in, this has many layers like unto an onion.
The former and somewhat of the latter. Okay, so there's this car dealership out in the hinterlands of Greenville called Honia Path. Honia, H-O-N-E-A. They are giving away, if you get a vehicle, they'll give you a Bible, an AR-15.
No. Beep, 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 beep. Back up.
I'm going to put you, you know what? I'm going to put you on speaker. I'm going to just read a little piece of this story. God, guns in America. Upstate dealership offers Bible, flag, AR rifle when you purchase a vehicle. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I'm reaching for the hockey puck because this ain't going to get any better.
No. This is serious. This is like the Onion. And then, wait a minute, here's one paragraph, and then I'm not going to read. We're not taking a political stance in any way, shape, or form, Hughes said. He's someone high up in that dealership. Okay, he said, we're all country folk, God-fearing people. We as patriotic people, we believe in our country and salute our military. The promotion runs through September, November, and as long as needed. So he said he has people. I was like, what the fuck? So we're, this country's fucked, man. We're in two different spheres right now. It's, I don't even know what to say anymore. I'm not surprised by anything that the president thinks he's an emperor or a monarch. This whole not showing up for subpoenas. My God, if you don't show up for a traffic ticket, you have a warrant out on you. What's going on here?
That's, well, I mean, the short answer is, hey, that's South Carolina. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
It's weary. I'm becoming weary. Like, a lot of people are just weary now. This is bullshit. You know, people have been confusing what they like and what makes them feel good as opposed to what is constitutional and what is within the lines of the law and what is not within the lines of the law.
Right. And let's be clear, Todd. There is a certain segment of this society where those lines do not matter at all. Whereas there's another segment of our society where they are brutally drawn with extreme prejudice.
Well, we're in a tough place here. I don't see an easy way out of this at all. I really don't. I don't know if Steve in Georgia has been listening to Washington Journal, but these people are fired up, and they're not meek and shrinking violets. And they say, my president, they're still saying give him a chance. To do what? These people believe that the no NATO is a good thing. Like, because he says it, because the Great White Hope said, oh, yeah, we don't, that's just extra stuff. We don't need that. No, we don't need NATO. You know, we pulled out of Syria. I mean, this shit is just about that. This shit's about to jump off. It won't take that long. It'd take maybe 11 months if this goes through over in Syria and with Turkey getting certain types of weapons. If Turkey can get our weapons and the Russian weapons.
Well, see, that's one of the things that sort of made me, whoop, what? At one point, Nitwit Nero said, Turkey's a great ally. They're helping build our planes. I guess some component of the F-35 comes from them or gets manufactured over there. I can't imagine why. But, see, we stopped the sale of the F-35 flying paperweight to them because they bought a Russian anti-aircraft system. Now, what better way to engineer an anti-aircraft system than to have a few of our very best aircraft, our very best, allegedly, fighter aircraft to tailor the anti-aircraft system to?
It comes to mind, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it came to mind. Mind.
Ooh, that's a cowbell.
No, that was just me stumbling over my own tonsils.
Oh, well, that's what scalpels are for. Look, well, I mean, are they swollen? Are they inflamed?
No, they're not even there. I got my tongue wrapped around my uvula.
Oh, well, you need to call Bugs Money for that. He'll pull it out.
Yeah, right.
No, but that I don't understand. Like, these people are so simple, Simon. They don't get it. they don't understand. I don't know what they're thinking about. They just feel good. It's like, you know what? This dude, you remember how Ingalls was like, okay, religion's opiate of the masses. Trump is the heroin for these people who just want to cling on to a forgotten, long-gone America. They see this crusty old white man who's supposed to be rich and got all these horse-looking women around him, and they want to be like that. And, you know, they're authoritarians, and the women just want to be, you know, be told what to do and all kind of nonsense. And they like that. They're willing to take that at any cost because they don't want to have to think too hard. They don't understand what we're talking about right now. They have no idea. They have no idea. Like, well, I like him. You know, that's what you're going to get.
He proves I'm right. He proves I've been right all along about all them people I hate.
Right, exactly. Yep, they were up to no good, right? Like, you were spying on the president before he was even president. Yeah, because he was committing crimes. No. But he's crazy. No. He's like me. Yeah, you're crazy too, motherfucker. No, this shit, how the hell can you have two, come on, man, the two weapon systems and that key piece of real estate? Now, we've talked about Turkey before. Now, come on. We're going to have to go way back machine, what, to the, like, the 900s, 1100s, you know, come on. That's like a keystone on a door, on the arch above a door, man. That's a keystone. This is nonsense. This dude is, and it was after a late night call with his handler, Putin. This is out of control, man.
Oh, speaking of calls.
What are you going to do, Bob? I'm demanding you do something right now. I'm serious.
I know. I got to quit. I got to quit laying about.
Yeah.
I'm being shiftless.
But you have a platform. You can do something, man. You can make these people act.
Sure I can.
What? I mean, I'm not trying to be funny. This shit is, if I have to laugh a little bit.
No, if you don't, it's over. I mean, I told, sometimes I wake up before Agnes does. And this morning was one of those mornings. And so I just wake up and fire up the telescreen and sit there and start engaging in our filthy morning habit and stumble in and listen to our miserable coffee maker go, oh, you know, like I'm doing it, like I'm hurting it by asking it to make coffee. Oh,
I don't want to.
Really? And I'll sit there and watch my filthy morning habit, and she'll, this morning she was still asleep. It's been exhausting lately. And I realized today, you know, that's a horrible thing to do to a human being. So henceforward, if that happens again, I'm going to get up, put my little Ugg boots on so my feet won't get cold, and come stumbling in here into the studio with my, you know, with my miserable coffee. Oh, and I'm gonna I'll put the headphones on and listen to, because, you know, every morning my filthy morning habit starts with them playing some clip of Nitwit Nero saying something idiotic. And that's a lousy thing to do to somebody's subconscious.
You make a good point.
So henceforward, you know, I'm going to come in because it's rough getting out of that. It's getting a little cooler here. I mean, you still live down in the tropics of South Carolina, but it's getting a little cooler here. So it'll be down in the low 50s or something. And just crawling out of
that's
those warm
good sleeping weather. Though. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. It's great sleeping weather. It's not so good for, I mean, hell, the coffee maker doesn't even like it, Todd. And so,
and it, does it fart on the coffee at the end? It goes.
Yeah, at the end, it goes.
Sort of like that old joke about what's the last sound you hear before a pube hits the ground. Yeah. Well, there went dinner in this mountain time zone. That's okay. And by the way, you got a note from Steve in New York. Oh, dear, dear Todd.
What's up?
It's not that the Trumpansies don't understand. They understand plenty. They like. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
That's worse.
Yeah, he makes them feel good about their clannishness.
Yep.
And you know, that dawned on me the other day. You know how much I hate that term that's been bandied about for 2 or 3 years now. Oh, it's the problem is our tribalism. Pisses me right off. But I finally figured out why the Tiger Mom, who first put that word into play with her Tiger Mom book or whatever, no, her tribalism book, I figured out why she chose the word tribal.
Why is that?
Because clannish was taken.
Well, who took clannish? We know who took clannish.
The Klan?
Right. See, they subverted a perfectly useful, multi-purpose English word. Because a clan used to be, right, a family group. It could be, you know, your clan is like, oh, your clan
might. But the word is toxic now.
I mean, can't even
unless you're specifically saying Clan MacLeod and there can be only one, then, you know, unless you say it with the fake stupid brogue, then the minute you hear the word clan, well, it's white sheets and burning crosses and pointy hoods.
Wow. That sounds like some, you know, who, 45 territory in terms of branding. That word's been branded now. They were successful in that.
Yeah. No, let me be clear. There's nothing wrong with the coffee maker. That's just the sound that those machines make.
Because they do. They do. They do.
Because
hey, let me bring this up really quick.
Yeah.
Before I forget, because this is something for everyone. Like sometimes you have people who want tea. Some people are coffee drinkers. And they need, you have to make copious pots of coffee because, you know, they have to have good coffee. But one way, those reusable nylon, whatever, coffee filter things, cone or basket, whatever. Or you can even get a bamboo one. They are excellent to make any size cup of coffee you want. As long as you know the measurement, you know, like, you know, depending on what coffee you're using, you know, around a tablespoon, a big tablespoon, a small tablespoon, whatever, sometimes 2 tablespoons, depending on what kind of coffee you drink. But you put it in one of those over the cup. You can make a single cup.
Oh, a pour over? Yeah, that, I mean, there's a word for that now. It's a barista word.
What?
It's a pour over, Todd. It's a pour over.
Well, look, I mean, but it's a trick to it. Honest to God, because I got a gift from somebody gave me something from Worldmark. I'm not going to say their name because I don't really go there. One of these like Pottery Barn looking places, but so it came with the whole little setup, and I broke the top part, of course, because I'm clumsy.
Yeah, don't you hate that?
I mean, it was like, oh, I was so upset. I was like, wow, okay, fine. So then I don't know when, you know, I was like, wait a minute. All it was like a thing to hold the filter. I said, I have a reusable filter, so. Said, let me try this because I mean I'm already used to cowboy coffee or whatever, and some people like that. But yeah, but the trick is to wet, you know, just the first pour, you just want just enough water, boiling hot water, to get to all the grinds moist, and let it drip for like maybe a minute and a half, not that long. Then you start to add the water, and let it fill up because otherwise you're not going to get full efficiency out of your coffee grinds. But it makes a wonderful cup of coffee. Oh my God, it is. I can't go back now. It will turn shit coffee into a great cup of coffee.
Well, see, since I'm a big fan of French press coffee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But for that first cup, I have precisely zero patience. And so we've got the little reusable, sustainable thing that mm-hmm. fits the K-cup hole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now they make little teeny tiny filters.
Right. For the K-cup.
For the little K-cup adapter.
Right.
The problem is the bottom of the little K-cup adapter, the thing's tiny to begin with. And I've got, you know, I could probably fit two of Donald Trump's hands in one of mine.
Okay.
I am not a tiny-fingered vulgarian. Big-handed vulgarian.
Right.
But the little K-cup adapter is tiny, and if we were doing video right now, I'm sitting here approximating that. And there's some, and the way the bottom of it is engineered, the thing does not want to stand upright.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the tiny little filter in the tiny little adapter, and you're hoping it remains standing upright while you stick your little spoon, because you can't use a scoop because the scoop's mouth's too broad. You need a spoon with a pointy end, and you stick that in to the coffee, and you ever so gently, and then you got to set the coffee bag down. Hope you don't dump the coffee out of your spoon. Hold on to the little Keurig hickey, and then slowly, you know, dump it in there and hope that you've gotten enough for a cup of coffee. But fuck me running, you didn't. So you got to do it, but you can't get a full scoop of a spoonful. You got to do about a half and put it in there again, praying to Jesus that you don't, and all the other deities, that you don't get any of the grounds between the filter and the K-cup thingy, because then you're going to have grounds in your fucking coffee and your morning's goddamn ruined.
That's what I was about to say. With the big... big fat fingers that you
and
have.
Then you pick it up and you can't go, because then you blow coffee grounds all over. So you got to just gently kind of brush it around, brush the edge clean with your finger. You snap the thing down, you put it in, and you press the button, and it goes, and you pray.
I want to know how you don't break the machine in the first place, because that's a lot of maneuvering. First thing in the morning.
Oh, I've thrown coffee all around the kitchen. And that's just for my shitty little cup of decaf. Now, I get serious about Agnes's. Now, as often as not, she makes mine. But if I wake up first, I make hers. And back when we were running around North Georgia in the company of Chris from Germany, well, Chris gets downright decadent with her coffee. And so now what I do is I get the cup out, I pour the half and half into Agnes's cup, then I pour in, I squeeze in a little bit of chocolate syrup. And I stir.
Before the coffee.
Yeah, and I stir it around. And then I use espresso for the first cup, and I make it on the smallest setting. And it goes, and it makes, and so the espresso goes in there. Then I take the spoon and I make sure that the half and half and the, because I'm making a mocha basically, is all stirred up. Then I make, and then I do another container that's 100% Colombian. So we got a blend going on. And then when that's done, I reach in the fridge and I pull out the whipped cream. And I, until it's got a nice little mound of whipped cream there, and I take it into her, and it makes her smile.
Yeah, it ought to. That's yeah. Well, I don't know what the male version of barista is, but yeah, he's doing the start. Yeah, well, that's a nice frothy latte, a mixed latte. That's beautiful.
No, it's a campana.
A campana has a name.
Campana, C-O-N-P-A-N-A.
Get out. It sounds delicious.
That's what Chris done teached me.
I remember talking with Chris when you guys were in Philly. That sounds great. Well, see, you know, it helps, man. The give and take. Give and take is the way to go. That sounds great.
And that's true. Ron and Raleigh points out you don't make coffee with boiling water. That's true. You want your...
Well, but...
If you want to get serious about it, I think it's like 196 degrees. And so when I'm doing my French, when I'm doing my French press, I've got one of those hot pot water thingies, and you can push the button because I found it like in the manager's cutout bin at Wally World or whatever, and it was marked way the hell down because I'm a cheap bastard. And so you can set it.
But
for
I'm
like
not
100...
feel like in Breaking Bad where he is. It's...
So you can set it for 196 degrees, and man, it goes ping, and you pour, and yeah.
I figure when I cut it off, the kettle off, put it on the stove, go over. I mean, when I say boiling water, by the time I get it to the cup, I know what you mean now. Yeah. Well, you know, tea is like that too. You don't want it scalding hot water in the tea; it'll just kill the flavor. You have to, like you said, it's a certain temperature because you want the essential oils to seep out without burning them.
And so this morning, before we got really going, a certain something special arrived in the mail yesterday.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard Tracy talking about it, but she there's a restaurant out there that does homemade apricot pineapple jam.
Oh.
And so Tracy lovingly and carefully rolled it up in like 97 layers of bubble wrap. And she also included a fresh jar of Trader Joe's yuzu to make sure that I don't bust out in Jones.
Oh, she hooked me up with the yuzu too. Oh yeah. Man!
But the deal was, I promised her that if the rain let up, I would take the not quite as good but close enough for around here, not quite as good as Trader Joe's, but yeah, it's called Izzio's sourdough. And I went out and I fired up the propane griddle. And I put some, and once it was good and hot, I put some European butter on it and let it melt and put that sourdough in it and let it toast that way. And then flipped it and toasted the other side lightly. And then while it was still nice and hot, I spooned on the apricot and pineapple jam.
Oh, man. Jeez.
It was righteous with the coffee.
God, that sounds so good. Ugh. Damn, that's I keep thinking cream cheese. I want that with some cream cheese, cause, you know.
Oh, now I'm getting shit. Now I'm getting shit from Scott in San Diego. You missed a step, Bob. You forgot to sprinkle a few shavings of good quality chocolate onto the whipped cream. This is West Virginia, Scott. Good quality chocolate here is
don't
called Hershey's.
Don't give her any ideas. That does sound good. You could use it like a cheese shaver. Anyway. Yo, that sounds delicious.
Oh, that stuff.
Oh, man.
The fucking stink bug. God, they're the fucking things are the state bird of West Virginia. I kid you not. There's no way to keep... the state's only billionaire, Jim Justice. That son of a bitch has stink bugs. Everybody has stink bugs here. I hate them.
I saw one yesterday.
I just had one park.
You know what?
I just had one park right on my right tit. And I was like, and I hope I didn't piss it off and get stunk.
Yeah. They're ubiquitous. They're everywhere.
Yeah, you've got them?
Well, I find one.
They're ugly little bastards.
Right. They have like a shield. Like, yeah, I know. Yeah, right. So,
and I'm trying to sort out because I hate them, and I mean they don't sting, they just stink, and I'm trying to sort out their evolutionary purpose, because they put out that stink so that other things won't eat them. So is there?
But nobody messes. I've never seen anybody any other insect family.
Right.
Insect. As a matter of fact, they go away. There's nothing around when they're going about their business. Like, you don't belong here. Why are you here? They just don't give a damn. They just show up and they just,
Right, and they don't sting or anything, but, they'll do shit like land in your hair, at which point, since you're, you can't see the top of your head, you don't know if that's like a stink bug or a hornet or a wasp or a sweet little honeybee that doesn't mean any harm but might sting the shit out of you anyway. Or, maybe it's an Ebola bug or something.
and the minute you up there, then the stink. And it'll run, and this is not a big studio, and it will run you out of here.
But they're annoying. They do that on purpose. They're like, you see me, I'm here, and you know you can't hit me, ha-ha. You know, they play a joke on you. Yeah, they're I don't know what to say about those types of things. Man. I have, oh, my God, it's almost 8:30. Because I know you have a new listener that wants to talk to you. But I have a question, and I want to see if you remember something. Do you remember during Bob Barr's congressional...
Bills.
Pardon?
Bill Barr.
I keep saying Bob. Everybody does that. Bill Barr, thank you.
Sorry, I mean,
No, that's right. Well, that's why people have names, because words mean something. William Barr, Bob Barr.
I just call him Barr to prosecution.
That's a good name. You know, when he was questioned about, you know, how do you feel about obtaining foreign help to win an election, I'm somewhat paraphrasing, he stuttered. He didn't have a clear answer. He said, well, I'm not quite sure what you mean. You know, he just didn't have, like he already knew they had done that already. He was like, yeah, I'm ready to do it again. I don't see a problem with it. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I do, yes.
How come the press doesn't bring that up?
Because they can't keep up either. I mean, I'm trying to operate on the theory of good faith. They can't keep up either.
But that's crucial to this. That's a fulcrum. It's crucial to everything that the Democrats are talking about to make their case. Taking foreign influence. And here we have the Attorney General.
Well, see, look, every time the Attorney General's name's brought up, they should just run the clip of Kamala Harris cross-examining him into committing perjury in front of God and everybody. And then the next question is, why has this fucker not been impeached?
Well, that was my next. That's exactly the next question, and I do believe it was.
Because whatever you think of Kamala Harris, whatever you think of Kamala Harris as a presidential candidate, she delivered a back-breaking cross-examination of that corrupt bastard.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. And you know, there's a guy on MSNBC. His name is Jonathan
Capehart. Oh, Capehart, yeah.
And right, and he made an interesting observation a week or two ago. He said, you know, remember Kamala serves on the House Intelligence Committee, and she's a prosecutor. And some of the questions that I'm paraphrasing him again, but he mentioned, you know, some of those questions might seem out in left field, but she can't say what she knows outright, but you can infer what she's thinking by some of her questions, you know, live time.
Oh, I mean, if I needed to, I could scroll back far enough and we could listen, because I keep it handy. We could listen to that cross-examination of Bill Barr. She knew exactly what she was after.
Yeah, he got stumbled on one word. Like, it was a simple word. Like, I'm not sure what you mean. What was that again? He's a terrible liar. He was like, who's this black bitch asking me these questions? You know, that's the way he had that look on his face.
No. Yeah, I mean, the word uppity was just swirling around his white brain.
He was taken aback. That she was so sharp, and she cut through the first seven layers of his skin, and she was in there. You know, she was wiggling something around in there. It was really something. But I think about that a lot in terms of what we're going through now. And it's not getting any better. And you know, pulling out of Syria, people, cui bono, you know, who's benefiting from all these actions? And I guess going back to that story about the God, guns, and the Bible, you know, that's that NRA Russian stuff, man, who were very successful. You know, people don't have a problem with Russia anymore, you know, because they're the white folk. This is about maintaining white supremacy, and that's really what this shit is about. These people, there's too many black babies, too many brown babies. Don't want to get enough of the brown people, and white men are being put upon, and you know, it's too late for that shit. You know, people
I know.
Feel like that. They should start
That, hey, you want a warm, fuzzy feel good?
What?
Because I've got a warm, fuzzy feel good. Let me find it here. Won't take but a second. So I just ran across this today. Yashar Ali.
Sounds like a Muslim. I can't do it.
That, journalist. He tweeted this, and it was just the most sweet, heartwarming little thing that I have seen in forever and ever and ever. And maybe we need these once in a while. There it is. This is a little fella on the way to school. And he's been given a morning, and he has a morning affirmation. And it's, like I said, it's so sweet, it just made my day. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's taking the first earliest steps of his young learning life. And somebody's teaching him to make every day a good one. Dig this.
I am smart, I am blessed, I can do anything. I am smart, I am blessed, I can do anything. I am smart, I am blessed, I can do anything.
Did you get that?
Little guy's
got his little backpack on over his little jacket. Guy's little Gap ball cap on, got a banana in one hand, and he's just walking down the street saying, I am smart, I am blessed, I can do anything. And I usually...
He's ready for the day.
I usually rebel against the religious stuff, like, but you know what? Being blessed doesn't mean you've been blessed by any particular, you know, sky critter or anything. Maybe you're blessed because you got a good mom and a good dad, or a good dad and a good dad, or a good mom and a good mom. Maybe you're getting off to a good little start in life. And I saw that, and that little guy, aw.
Man, that's nice. You know what that reminded me of when I went to my friend's Phil Freeland's memorial last week, and he had. I don't know if Ryan was there or not. There were a lot of people there. Durham, let me say this about Durham. Durham has an energy. Downtown Durham, oh my God, it's nice. It's really nice. It's cool. It's nice. But anyway, his kids, one of his sons had his family up there. So they were Phil's grandchildren. And one of them was really little. Everybody, all the little kids took the microphone. And they were inspired. I mean, they had something, you know, to say similar to what you just played. And it was an uplifting for a memorial. I'm telling you, it was uplifting. It was like there was a spirit there. And maybe, you know, all religion might be is a focus of spirit. Because you think about when people go to church, everyone's focusing on one thing. It brings in, you don't have to believe in a religion or a person or a deity. It's about energy, a focusing of energy. You know what I mean? And that's just a thought. But that, what you just said reminded me of that. To see, because it was a very small child, Phil's grandson, and he was little, and he remembered a poem, and he recited the poem, and he got the response from the audience, and it was something. It was really something, Bob. It was on the news. It was something. Anyway, I've taken up enough of your time, and maybe someone else has something to say. And, you know, you everyone goes through certain things, and certain things are trials, and certain things are tribulations, as they say. And, you know, life is, sometimes we don't appreciate life when it's really easy. And we start to take, you know, pay more attention when it's hard. But, you know, that's what life is. Life is like the ocean. There are waves, there's ebbs, there's flows. You know, and there are riptides.
Oh, I'm pulling out every handy dandy philosophical thing I can get my hands on right now, for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And I just keep trying to tell myself, we're all going to get through this. We're all going to, you know, we're all going to get through. We're going to be, and most importantly for our, you know, for our son.
Mm-hmm.
And that no matter how you slice it, we are sentient beings on the only, with the amazing coincidence of being alive and sentient on the only planet that we know of in the entire universe that has that sentient life. And that's about as good as I can do for the moment. Tracy, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't want to miss your call as I was wrapping up with Todd, so I just figured I'd wrap you into this conversation.
Oh,
hi,
Jesus.
Tracy.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
What's up?
He's so formal.
Nigga, freeze. Come on, man. No, I'm fine. I just got home a little while ago. I didn't have to take Penny home this afternoon, so I went to the Y and swam a couple of practice. Well, my attempts to swim are still, not so much. And then I ran a couple of miles on the treadmill, and now I'm at home cutting up bell pepper for jambalaya.
Winning
that part. Winning.
Well, I'm gonna let you guys talk. I want to hear you, Tracy, talk. And
I was just thinking, what am I gonna talk about? I have been kind of out of the loop. I've just kind of divorced myself from the bullshit. I'm worried for the wife because you know, the Dodgers lost last night.
And oh, the Dodgers are in trouble.
Well, the series is tied 2-2. The deciding game is tomorrow night. At least the good news is they're back here in LA at Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, that helps.
The Nationals aren't going quietly into that good night.
No, and of course my Braves will probably break my heart too.
Oh, are they in the playoffs?
Yeah, oh yeah. St. Louis.
They're American League, right?
Oh no, National League. I'm a National League guy.
The National League. Okay,
The American League American League plays that ball with 10 players on the squad. Ain't baseball.
That's not baseball.
You know, where the pitcher doesn't have to stand in and bat.
Oh, that's some bullshit. Even I know that, you know. No, that's right, because they play the Dodgers, and the last couple of times they played the Dodgers won. Because like I said, the only thing I care about with baseball is my fondest memory, and I was telling after I did that 5K this past Sunday, my fondest memory growing up, my grandfather, my dad's dad, paternal grandfather. Now, he had a TV in the living room. You know, that was back when there was only one TV in the house. But when I would go visit, he would sit in the kitchen playing solitaire, listening to the Dodgers baseball game and Ben Scully announcing. I don't ever think he ever watched the game on television. I think he just, every game, he would just listen to it on the radio.
And you know what?
You have somebody like Ben Scully announcing.
Right, exactly, because the play-by-play announcers of yesteryear were, for all, they were 20th century homers. You know, the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Right. It's like with, back in the day with Chick Hearn, you know, for the Lakers. Same thing. You didn't have to watch the game when Chick Hearn was announcer. You did not.
No, and I would say, the vast majority of play-by-play announcers now who do so with the benefit of video, they're as much an annoyance as they are a benefit to the broadcast. But when I was a little boy, we'd get in the car. My dad was far, far from home down in Alabama, and he would drive to a high point in the county on a Sunday afternoon, trying to bring in the Reds Sunday afternoon ball game if he didn't have to work on a Sunday. And we would sit there in the car listening to the Reds on the radio.
See that part.
And it was magic. And those people were great.
It was, you know, like I said, I you know, and just to listen to Vince Scully, he is still with us. God bless his soul. I mean, he retired, I think, was it last year or the year before? But, yeah, I mean, again, you know, me in sports, whatever. But even I can appreciate the artistry and the sheer magistry of listening to the skills these men had back in the day. Because the fools, I mean, you know, not so much. They try, but...
Yeah, and see, before, you know... I mean, money's always been a big part of it. But when I was a little boy, I remember first and second grade running home as hard as I could get. Yeah, just hustling. Them little legs just a pumping to get home because the World Series was on TV in the middle of the afternoon.
That part.
And you know, day baseball, it's a lot more, there's something a lot more enjoyable about day baseball than night baseball. But Tracy, I've got a story for us.
We got a story?
I got a story.
Do I need to go sit down and get the really big glass of rock gut?
I mean, at this point in time, all these stories are just another day in America, another day in Trump America.
Okay.
It comes out of Pennsylvania. You know, because remember, Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the west and Philly in the east and Alabama in the middle. And that in the middle part contains a little community called Happy Valley.
But they're probably not very happy there, are they?
Oh, well, no, they're deliriously happy. Happy Valley is the home of Penn State University.
Oh, okay.
And Penn State fans are almost... Penn State football fans are almost as obnoxious as Alabama and Notre Dame football fans. Some would say more so.
Is that even possible?
Well,
it
challenges the laws of the laws of the universe, I realize, but still. So enter a young man, a junior, on the football team. He plays safety on defense. His name's Jonathan Sutherland. Jonathan Sutherland is a young African-American man. And he's got some serious locks coming out the back of his helmet.
No, 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 no. Okay.
And there's a serious foo-frog going down at Penn State because the head coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions opened his weekly press conference not by talking about last week's game or next week's big game at Billable Rick's beloved Iowa. No, he addressed a letter that was sent and put out for public consumption by some, let's say, older Penn State fans.
Okay. As I pull my locks up into a bun.
Yep.
Okay.
The letter was written directly to Jonathan Sutherland. And it's all Penn State-y. So at the top of the letter, it says, "We are Penn State proud." Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna read this in my Richard Pryor white people voice. Dear Jonathan,
you should have sent this letter to me so I could read it in my white guy voice.
Well, I didn't see it till right before airtime.
Damn it.
Dear Jonathan, okay. My wife and I are proud older graduates of Penn State. We follow all Penn State sports, football, wrestling, volleyball, gymnastics, basketball. We love it all. I played all the sports in my younger days, still played full court basketball into my 50s, loved the competition but never had the size or the talent to reach your level. Though the desire was there. Though the athletes of today are certainly superior to those in my days, we miss the clean-cut young men and women from those days. Watching the Idaho game on TV, we couldn't help but notice your, well, awful hair. Surely there must be mirrors in the locker room. Don't you have parents or girlfriend who've told you those shoulder-length dreadlocks look disgusting and are certainly not attractive? We congratulate you on your game against Pitt, but you need to remember you represent all Penn Staters, both current and those alumni from years past. We would welcome the reappearance of dress codes for athletes. You will certainly be playing on Sunday in the future, but we have stopped watching the NFL due to the disgusting tattoos, awful hair, and immature antics in the end zone. Players should act as though they've been there before. For the glory, signed them. And the them...
They didn't even put their name?
No, they did. They did. I'm trying to find... There's a name here. Let's see here. Oh, David Peterson, a 1966 Penn State graduate in speech pathology.
So that was the year I was born.
I would just like to see the coaches and get the guys cleaned up and not looking like Florida State and Miami guys. You know what Florida State and Miami guys is the carrying all the freight for.
Yeah.
You know, those ghetto gangbangers.
Those Negroes.
And so he, you know, I mean, the letter writer just owned it and still stands by it. But here's the thing though. I read all the way through that shit and recognizing it for what it was and the dog whistles and the code that was in it. The first thing that came to my mind is I know how that sumbitch votes.
that part.
Oh, that's a. I mean, he votes Republican every. I bet he's. I bet him and his wife have an RV full of maggot hats and maggot shirts and they like the clean cut little maggots. But to James Franklin, the head coach of Penn State, by the way, Penn State's football program should have been given the death penalty a few years ago when it turned out that it was, you know, a little boy rape university. And Joe Paterno knew about it and just kind of looked the other way. Franklin.
So how does he fix his mouth to talk about clean cut when the parent coach was raping little boys? Or when the coaches?
Well, you know, the little boys that were being raped were clean cut, Tracy.
Okay.
And the guy doing the raping of the little boys was very clean cut. To his credit, James Franklin said, "The football that I know and love brings people together. It embraces differences, black, white, brown, Catholic, Jewish, or Muslim, long hair, short hair, no hair. They're all in that locker room together. Teams all over this country are the purest form of humanity that we have. We don't judge. We embrace differences. We live, we learn, we grow, we support, and we defend each other. We're a family. PSU football brings people together like very few things on this planet." And, I mean, it's gone around on social media and created a firestorm. Penn State itself responded by saying, "While we don't know the source of this letter or the authenticity, obviously its content does not align with our values. We strongly condemn this message or any message of intolerance." And then the athletic director, Sandy Barber, said, "I stand with our Penn State student athletes and appreciate how they represent PSU in competition, in the classroom, and in the community. Their dress, tattoos, or hairstyle has no impact on my support, nor does their gender, skin color, sexuality, or religion, as long as they don't unionize and try to make us pay them." Oh, I added that part. Because another way to say, hey, get off the young man's back. We're making a fortune off of him, and all we have to do is let him go to class. If he wants to.
If he wants to.
But the young man is on the dean's list.
That part.
And he said he's been wearing...
He's an athlete and a scholar.
Right. And he's been wearing dreadlocks since he was about 10 years old.
So he's been wearing locks probably about as long as I've been wearing mine. Because I got...
9 years.
Oh, shit. I got my... Yeah. No, actually, I've been wearing mine longer. I got my locks in July 2000. It'll be 20 years.
But even the coach, trying really, really hard, still did that thing. He said that Jonathan Sutherland is one of the most respected players in our program. He's confident. He's articulate. He's intelligent. He's thoughtful. He's caring. And he's committed. But he used the articulate, but then I think he
did he say noble?
No, he said this. "I would be so blessed if my daughters would marry someone with his character and integrity one day."
He gave up his wife's daughter to the brother?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Uh-oh. You got to play the Cleavon Little clip. Where are the white women at?
Yeah, no, I already did that earlier.
I know, but it's never too... you can never hear Cleavon Little too many times.
Just for you. Where is it? There it is.
Hey, where are the white women at?
All better now?
And so you remember we talked about, you know, my second act or third or fourth act, whenever I figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Right.
And see, right here, right there, I can't. I wear locks. I'm not cutting my... I've had my locks for almost 20 years now. Not cutting my hair. And I can't, there's, you know, corporate America and me, besides the fact, because if I go back to a corporate job, I'm going to have a 12-year-old that's probably going to be my boss at this point, the millennial. You know, like the girl that I almost throat punched the other day, millennial Malibu Barbie. And I cannot. And I'm too old to go to jail. And I just, you know, I don't want the side eye because I'm wearing my hair naturally. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to spend hundreds, you know, thousands of dollars to put fake hair in my hair and straighten and chemicals, you know, and my weaves and all that in my hair just to make Becky or, you know, or Biff feel comfortable because, you know, they seem that my hair is too militant. What the fuck is my hair doing to you? It just reminds me of, you know, after, what's his name? The fool that called the female basketball, college basketball team nappy-headed hoes. And then in
Don
answer
Imus.
To that, India, yeah, and then in answer to that, India Irie wrote this amazing song, I Am Not My Hair. And anybody who, in Horn family, I y'all listen, Google that song if you haven't heard it, have never heard it before. But or have since forgotten because it's been years. But the song is like, I am not my hair. I am not the skin. I am not I am not this hair. I am not this skin. I am not your expectations. No. I am who I am. You know, if you cut off my hair or if I, you know, if I wore a hijab or anything, that is just my outer person. That is not who I am. That is not who, you know, it's not going to keep me from doing my job. It is not hurting you in any shape, form, or fashion. But you're so caught up in your whiteness and you're threatened, you know, anything that's not, that white people deem, you know, other or too ethnic or threatening or militant. You know, I remember growing up and people, you know, when black women and men started wearing afros, you know, like Sam Cooke was the first black man to perform on national television with an afro. Because back then, you know, the brothers was wearing conks.
Wait, you what? Know, they had wait. No, no. Educational moment. Wearing what?
A conk. C-O-N-K-S. Basically processed it. That's what they call a conk.
Oh, okay.
So fried, in other words, fried, dyed, and laid to the side, you know, that chemical processing, you know, better known as a perm now. But it was back then, it was straight up a lie. I mean, you saw Spike Lee's Malcolm X, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or did you see it?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
So that, remember that scene when Denzel Washington is getting his hair, you know, and is burning? And they get ready to wash it, rinse it out, and they can't because the water's turned off.
Yes.
And it's so hot that they have to dip their head in the toilet. Yeah, that part. And we're talking, you know, like James Brown, Little Richard, all of them, that's how they wore their hair. And Sam Cooke's like, that's not how our hair is supposed to be. Sam Cooke said, fuck it.
The world before Jerry Curl.
Yes, the world. And I got to see if I can find pictures of me in a Jerry Curl. You'll die.
No.
Yes. Queen Tracy. I had a Jerry Curl. Oh my God. Then my hair turned red like everybody else's. Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
Wait a minute.
Shut up, Bob.
My hair turned red like everybody else's.
It's like, you know, I mean, I want to see pictures of you in the 80s, motherfucker. Did you have a mullet?
No, I never had a mullet, by God. They're all gone now. I don't know whatever happened to them. But, man, me in 1982, 83 with my Peter Frampton hair.
Okay, so that was my next question. How big was the hair?
Oh, no, in the summer of 1983, I had gone probably close to a year without a haircut.
Ooh.
And back then when I had all of it, my hair started curling the minute that it emerged from the follicle. And I never had a perm or anything. I never had a perm or anything in my life. And, I'd get out of the shower in the morning, shake it, and get on down the road. And it would, I don't look like Peter Frampton, but from the hair out, it looked like the cover of Frampton Comes Alive.
Well, see, if you had hair, like Jan's hair is the same way until she started now she straightens it. But her hair, naturally curly too. And, I would kill. But I think there's some, now I'm going to go search and try to find the pictures of Tracy Porter with a Jerry curl.
I mean, I've mostly had the same haircut all my life. But, for instance, there's a picture from back right out, not too long after we started the horn, where, John Fox described me as Bob in his Viking gone to seed phase. Because somewhere along the way, when I started getting older, the curl fell out of my hair.
Oh, that sucks.
And so now it does it a little bit, but not like it used to. Of course, when it was doing, part of the reason I laughed when you said, then my hair turned red like everybody else's. I'm thinking, yeah, like mine. Because it wasn't copper, but it was almost there. It was strawberry blonde, way on the strawberry end of the spectrum.
No, there was this stuff called Good Fred Oil.
Oh, wait a minute. We have done it to Terrace again. Subject line, Bob in a mullet, laughing like a crazy man on Caltrain again. You know, one of these days we're going to make trouble for Terrace that way. It was a few months ago he was getting some really strange looks in the gym because he had his headphones on, only he wasn't listening to any music. He's listening to this program and, cackling.
Well, there's this stuff back in the day called Good Fred Oil.
Yeah. Tracy?
Is you?
We disconnected for a moment. Good Fred Oil.
Good Fred Oil. So it was like, S curl and, basically like, coming to America. So, Afro Sheen wasn't like Jericho. Afro Sheen was basically was.
Wait! Didn't Afro Sheen sponsor Soul Train?
Hell yes, Afro Sheen sponsored Soul Train.
I thought it.
And the best Afro Sheen commercial ever was the Afro Sheen commercial.
The Frederick Douglass Afro Sheen. Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
The Frederick, it's like, yo, brother, what you doing with your hair, man? I miss the 70s. God, I miss the 70s.
That commercial had that commercial had a sort of Schoolhouse Rock quality to it.
Yes, it did.
Only and live
actors. I'm so mad that you did only live actors. But, man, that commercial, you have to... One day when we do it, we don't have to do it not tonight, but we have to find a commercial just to play it for the Horn family. I think you played it once. But that commercial is the most awesomest thing ever. And I remember watching that commercial. I mean, Soul Train was the shit. Because there was not a lot of representation, for Black people. And Soul Train was just us being us. And, because the only thing we had, was American Bandstand. And when even when black artists were allowed to perform on American Bandstand, they couldn't be black artists. But then you got people on Soul Train, and they could be blackity black, Jerry Curl wearing, Negroes, grease slicking on the ground, just platforms, bell bottoms, booty shorts. Oh God, Afro puffs. Lord Jesus, that part.
The minute my hair touched my ears, my father began having conniptions.
Well, see, yeah, no.
He said the best haircut I ever had was my 10th grade year of high school when I had to get my hair done into a crew cut for a play I was doing. He was brokenhearted when I didn't keep it.
What play did you have to do that you did?
I was playing an army colonel in the Second World War.
Okay. Yeah. That part. Well, see, you know, I miss the 70s. I miss the new, as a matter of fact, I'm throwing my mama's 70th birthday party. And I'm still going back and forth to the goddamn menu. But the one thing that I don't have to worry about is the music, because you know it's going to be all 70s and 60s all night long. What else would I play? That's it. Motown.
Can come up into the 80s, little Prince, little Michael.
My mom.
My bad. Sorry.
No. Yep. And we still got to be careful. We can't play Parliament. Oh, yeah, you can. Flashlight. You could do some Funkadelic. We could do some Parliament.
Yeah.
We got... Yay!
No tear the roof off the sucker.
No, don't off the sucker. No. But we get to the spinners, the OJ, stuff like that.
Man, I heard Rubber Band Man in the store the other day.
I just had to stop and
revel in it.
Did you just kind of smile?
I almost white guy danced for a second.
Don't do that, because I'll know, and it'll be a violation. But see,
and then there goes my cookout pass for next year.
Your cookout pass is hereby and permanently revoked.
Yeah, hanging by a thread.
So no. Just do not do the white guy dance, and we'll be fine. Because, there's only so much we're allowed to do. And I know you got to go, but thank you for, being you. I know we'll talk later. I hope everything is going better with just getting some semblance of whatever.
It's complicated as hell. And made far more complicated than it ever needed to be. And
because,
it's just sad.
Yeah. Well, I know you don't believe, I'm lifting him up in prayer every night. I just hope.
And I appreciate that. He needs it.
Every little thing I can do on my end, I'm going to do. So on that note, I'm about to throw the sausage in the smoked chicken sausage in the oil now for the jambalaya. I got everything cut up. I got the green onions. I got the white onions. I got the bell pepper. I got the garlic.
Yeah, I think when things get back down to normal, I got to get one of those outdoor propane, cooking stands, propane burner, and get the big old heavy, big old heavy 125 plus year old Dutch oven out and get busy on some gumbo. It's gumbo time.
It's gumbo time, baby. It is some gumbo, some black eyed peas, some greens, and some cornbread. and some hog maw, all that.
All of that. And I gotta I gotta look up my recipe my recipes for red gullah rice and yellow gullah rice. Hooey.
That too. Ooh, wee doggy. That's some good eating. I can speak Southern.
Mm-hmm. You just stay the hell away from here. That's all.
No, I'll come to visit. I'll come visit, but y'all keep real quick, and I'm not, because I told you the other day about my well-meaning white friends and my wife talking about me us retiring down in Texas.
Yeah.
And they're like, but it's okay. It's gotten better. Now, I said, I love it when white people telling a black woman that everything's okay for black people in the South. I'm like, okay, tell that to Sandra Bland.
Right. No, it's gotten better and is like saying hell is 10 degrees cooler.
That part. So, and on that note, I'm out. Love you all. Good night, Horn family. Don't forget, if anybody got money to give Bob, don't hesitate. Drop him a couple of dollars. He needs it. Good night. Thank you,
Tracy. Have a good night and bon appetit. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver from Southern California. And it's true, we're going to wind up $100 short and hoping that, you know, we could just keep up with things through the week because it's stressful, and you know. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air with your subscriptions, your ad hoc contributions, you know, a la carte. That's what we're calling it, a la carte. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers both. Thanks to all of you who share your precious time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. I love you, son. Later.